Not yet. Put your hands behind your back, he orders. I do as I'm told, and he moves around to put handcuffs on me.
Wait, no,
Ryan argues. But I look at her, softening my expression. It's fine. Don't say anything. Don't tell them who I am.
All right, I'm taking this one in,
the officer tells the other cop who's busy on his walkie-talkie.
Clear this out and call Mr. and Mrs. Burroughs.
The other officer nods and gets back on his radio. The cop leads me out of the house and I look at Ryan. There's a million things I want to say. I'm done here. I'm going home. I'll be anything you want, even gone if that's what you need. I love you. But I just shoot my eyes up to 10 and tell him, make sure she gets home safe. An hour later, I'm sitting in the police station, no longer handcuffed. I lean back in one of the chairs against the wall, my legs stretched out and crossed at the ankle, and my arms folded over my chest. A female cop is talking on the phone behind the counter, and I tap my finger under my arm, playing the tune we were working on at Sticks tonight in my head. At least I got the watch back. I got both of what I came here for, so I should be happy. Unfortunately, though, those things that seemed so important 3 weeks ago seem kind of trivial now.
Why did he have your watch?
I hear someone ask. I jerk, startled, and look up. Ryan leans on the counter next to my chair, probably having just come down the hallway from the entrance.
That was the watch you were looking for, right?
She presses.
How did you get here?
I sit up. You didn't drive, did you?
I'm sober,
she answers.
Now answer the question. What are you doing? What's going on?
I face forward again, leaning back in my chair. I know I need to stop dodging, and I have no reason not to tell her, but where do I start? I want her to understand, but I also want to know if we can make it back to where we were in our letters and to where we were when I was Mason. I want to get there without her pity.
You want me to trust you,
she points out.
But you're still keeping things from me.
I turn to her, opening my mouth to speak, but just then three guys come down the hallway and enter the station, stopping when they see me. I move to stand up, but my cousin pushes me back down.
I'm sorry, man.
I rush out, hating that he had to come all the way down here. But Will just smiles at me.
Getting arrested is a Thunder Bay boy's rite of passage,
he jokes, beaming with pride. I roll my eyes. Will's two friends, Michael Crist and Kai Mori, standing behind him, looking amused. I guess they would know. A few years ago, they reigned over my hometown when they were high school basketball heroes, and they haven't left the limelight since, simply exchanging notoriety for infamy. Will crosses his arms over his chest, giving me a condescending look.
You should have been able to get out of this yourself, you know?
He chastises.
Watch and learn.
He turns around, all three of them heading to the counter, no doubt with their best smiles on their faces. Ryan shifts to my left, but we both remain quiet.
Hi, I'm William Grayson III,
Will says to the female cop.
Officer Weber, is it?
She darts her eyes between him and the other two, looking on guard.
My grandfather is Senator Grayson, he tells her. And I really hope he's your favorite person on the planet. He's always supported police officers.
I laugh to myself at his smooth voice, which is probably working on her. Kai leans on the counter, quiet but with a small smile on his face, while Michael, the lead point guard for the Meridian City Storm basketball team, stands tall and intimidating. He reaches out a hand.
And I'm Michael Crist.
Oh, yes.
She smiles wide.
My husband is a huge fan.
Just your husband?
He teases. A blush crosses her cheeks and I want to puke. She then shakes Will's and Kai's hands, exhaling a long breath, her demeanor suddenly happy and relaxed.
Well, what can I do for you, gentlemen?
Will leans on the counter, getting intimate.
Misha Lair Grayson is also the grandson of Senator Grayson, and our grandfather would consider it a personal favor to him if you would allow the family to deal with Misha.
I can feel Ryan tense next to me, and I wince. Shit. Yeah, I forgot about not having told her that particular detail, too.
Will goes on, turning his head toward me, and the cop follows his gaze.
He's kind of the black sheep, I'm sure you can tell.
He explains to her as her eyes skim down my tattooed arms.
We'll take him back to Thunder Bay, and he will not return to Falcon's Well. You have our word. We'll escort the little shit home right now.
I grind my teeth together. Will's eyes twinkle with laughter. The cop regards me.
Well, the other young man is claiming he stole a watch, she explains. However, he doesn't have it on him, and we have no witnesses. We were going to let him go anyway, but he won't tell us where he lives or his parents' names.
Will nods, straightening back up.
Trust us. We'll take him home.
She looks around at the three of them, seeing their perfect black suits, clean fingers, and not a tattoo in sight, so, of course, they're upstanding gentlemen.
All right, she finally concedes. Take him home and keep him out of trouble.
They shake her hand and walk away from the counter, looking smug as they head over to me. I shoot out of the chair and stand in front of Will, staring him eye to eye and trying to keep my voice low.
I'm the black sheep, I challenge. I'm the black sheep. Did I just spend 2.5 years in prison? How could she not know who you were? Why don't you roll up your sleeves and show her your tattoos?
Will adjusts his collar and cuffs, primping himself.
I told you, never let anyone see all your cards. Didn't I say that? I'm a wolf in sheep's clothing. They have no idea what I'm capable of until it's too late.
His friend Kai quietly laughs at his side.
I told you not to get a tattoo on your neck. Will scolds. Didn't I say that? Did you see how we worked her? You should have been able to get yourself out of that if you had any sense.
It's not on my neck, I argue back. It's just like I gesture to my neck, up a little, and
hi.
I hear a calm, deep voice and look over to see Kai staring at Ryan. Michael follows suit and moves close to her.
So, this is the one who was at a party without you, doing body shots, huh?
She scowls and I retort, Dane needs to shut his mouth. But Michael just smirks down at Ryan.
If that was my girl, her ass would be red for a week.
Yeah, I don't physically threaten my girl, okay?
And look where she was.
Will pushes Michael back.
Don't listen to him.
He soothes Ryan.
He doesn't lay a hand on his girl. She has swords.
Kai laughs quietly off to the side, but Ryan's face is twisted in disgust. She looks to me.
Who are these pigs?
I walk for the front door, knowing everyone will follow. Will's my cousin. These are his friends. I called him so I wouldn't have to call my dad.
And how's my baby?
Will calls from behind, referring to his truck. He lent it to me when he got arrested a few years ago. I had it the whole time he was on the inside, but since he's been out, he hasn't come looking for it, so I hoped he forgot about it. I hope you don't want it back, I tell him. I have some good memories in that truck. I shoot a look over to Ryan, seeing a blush cross her cheeks.
Yeah, me too,
Will answers.
I guess I can let you hang on to it for a little while longer.
Ryan stares ahead, her jaw flexing.
I'm out of here.
She pushes through the doors, but I call after her.
No, I need to talk to you.
But she powers toward her Jeep, which is parked on the other side of a building at the left of the parking lot. I run after her, forgetting Will and his friends.
Stop!
I take her arms and pull her to a halt next to the passenger side of her car.
What do you want me to say, huh? That I fucked up? I know I did. I'm sorry.
I'm sick of her defiance and how she won't give me an inch. Just say you miss me. I take her face in my hands.
Look at me.
But she pushes my hands down.
I hate you. Let me go.
Why? I lash out. So you can go back to that party, back to your prom date? You gonna fuck him too?
Maybe, she yells. Maybe I'll sink as low as you and we'll have something more in common. Maybe I won't hate you so much.
I bare my teeth staring at her. You don't hate me, you love me, and I love you. She slaps me so hard, my head whips to the side and the burn spreads across my skin.
Don't say that,
she growls low.
I want Mason. He doesn't love me, he's just good to me.
Her tone taunts, turning breathy and sultry.
Really good.
I don't miss her meaning. I was a fuck and nothing more. She liked me when I was just that, when I wasn't Misha.
Yeah?
I turn my eyes back on her, playing along.
Is that what you want?
I come in, grabbing the backs of her thighs and lifting her up.
Your dirty little secret who will fuck you in the back of the truck, hiding you so your stuck-up, shallow friends don't know how good I give it to you.
Her breathing hitches, and she only hesitates a moment before her hands come up and grip my shoulders. I dive down, kissing her neck and reveling when she bends it back, opening for me. But then I see something out of the corner of my eye and look up, realizing the guys are still here. Michael and Kai are in the front seat of an SUV, Michael leaning far forward from the driver's side to watch out of Kai's window, while Will is paused at his open back door looking amused.
Seriously? I snap.
Michael and Kai quickly turn away and Will clears his throat.
All right, we're out.
He climbs into the car.
Stay out of trouble and wrap it up. Hell hath no fury like Grandpa Grayson dealing with a teen pregnancy.
Ryan's nails dig into my skin and I close my eyes, coming up and slamming my mouth down on hers as I hear the SUV speed away. I kiss her lips, inhaling her and getting so fucking lost in my need for her. Her tongue brushes mine and her teeth bite and nibble me. Driving me so insane I can't think.
Ryan, I gasp, pressing my cock into her as I squeeze her ass too hard.
I need to be closer.
We shouldn't do this.
She pants as I pull down her shirt and touch her everywhere not covered by her bikini top.
Don't act like you're going to tell me no.
I pull open the passenger side door.
I know you like this side of me.
She looks around, probably nervous we'll be seen, but the parking lot is dead. I pull my shirt over my head, dropping it on the ground next to hers, and start unbuttoning her shorts, going in for another kiss to quiet any protest she might dream up. Her shorts fall to the ground, and she whimpers in my mouth.
Get on my lap, I tell her,
taking the seat and pulling her in. She climbs on, and I shut the door, leaving our clothes outside. She reaches behind her and pulls the strings of her bikini, the whole top falling away. And I grab it and toss it before doing the same to her bottoms, pulling the strings that secure it at the sides.
Oh, Jesus, I groan,
kissing her again as I take her ass in one hand and dive between her legs with the other. She's so smooth and wet. She reaches between us and unfastens my belt. And I do the best I can, getting my jeans down and my cock free while trying not to break the kiss.
Give it to me, she moans. I want it.
I know. Pulling out a condom from my jeans, I rip it open and roll it on, holding my cock steady as I pull her up. I slip it down her length and position myself under her. She groans, already rolling her hips in sexy little movements. Finding her hot entrance, I thrust my hips up and put the tip in and she does the rest, lowering herself. She spreads her legs as far as the seat will allow and I pull her into me, burying myself deep.
Hell yes, I breathe out.
Her hips roll shallow and fast in little figure eight movements and she stays close, her tits rubbing against my chest. I can taste her mouth even though our lips aren't touching.
Say my name, I whisper. Who's fucking you right now?
She keeps stride, her beautiful ass swaying in and out and the car filling with wet heat.
I'm fucking you, she corrects. And I really don't care whose dick it is.
That's bullshit. It could be anyone in this Jeep, she says, biting my bottom lip. Maybe someone from that party, even. If you hadn't shown up, I would have still been riding someone's cock tonight. I dig my fingers into her ass. Were you going to be bad? She mules, nodding. Show me how bad, baby. I bring one hand up, palming her breast. How were you going to screw some stranger tonight? She picks up the pace, leaning back so I can get a good view of her gorgeous body working me. Her tits sway with the motion, and I close my eyes, letting my head fall back as I rub her clit with my thumb. You would have made him come good, I tease. Sweet little pussy like this. Her moans get higher and faster, and I open my eyes, seeing her watching me. But then, she suddenly comes in close again, wrapping her arms around my neck and covering my mouth with hers, kissing me deep and hard as she rides us both home. I come, wrapped in her arms, legs, and mouth, and feeling her sweaty and smooth skin stuck to mine. She cries out, her pussy tightening hard around me as she comes and thrusts her hips, taking me in again and again, until she's spent. I hold her as we both come down, the heat nearly unbearable. I have no idea how long before she'll let me touch her again, so I'm going to enjoy this. She can be a nightmare, but this still feels better than any dream. Her breathing calms, but she stays buried in my neck, sounding as if she's asleep. I wish we would have met in grade school, I say quietly, smiling to myself. We would have played well together. On the playground, I mean. She pulls her head up and there's pain in her eyes. I cup her face in my hands. I know you, I tell her. I know you now. You wouldn't have wanted this from anyone else, because before me, you had sex once, 2 years ago. Her eyebrows pinch together and I can see tears glistening. Yeah, I remember the letter, babe. You were a mess, feeling ashamed and hurt, and I wanted to kill the guy. Everyone told you to do it, and you did, I whisper. He never spoke to you again, and that's why you waited. For me. I wasn't waiting for you. You waited for it to feel right. I bite back, not taking any more of her shit. I was jealous when you confided in me about your first time. That was when I realized I was possessive of you. I stare straight into her eyes. Never sure about anything this much. I want everything about you, Ryan. And I know you want me. Her body shakes a little and I lean in, kissing her on the cheek. But I love the way you lie.
Chapter 18. Ryan. The next day, he's not in our first class. I know where he lives, and it brings me back to when I first noticed he'd stopped writing all those months ago. I can check on him if I'm really worried. He knows where to find me if he wants to see me. But wait, I'm the one who doesn't want to see him. I told him to go. So what if he did? I know he never intended for things to get so out of hand, and I believe he's sorry, but I can't wrap my head around it. Pretending you're someone else is bad enough. Lurking right under my nose with me none the wiser is awful. But sleeping with me? How could he do it? Was he Mason or Misha in that truck at the drive-in? Was he really ever planning on telling me? I shouldn't have relented last night. The emotions were high, I missed him, and when he took me in his arms, I just wanted to stop fighting for 5 minutes. I wanted to feel good with him again, and forget. But now, the light of day is so bright I want to crawl back under the covers. Everyone heard him scold me at the party last night. Acting like I'm his property. They may not know what's happened between us, but they know something happened to make him that angry with me. And they know I've been lying about it. I force down the lump in my throat and walk up to my cubby in the locker room, next to Lila and Caitlin as they dress for P.E. Hey, I say, trying to force a chipper tone. But Lila doesn't respond. Instead, she lifts her nose, sniffing the air and complaining to Caitlin next to her. God, did the janitors clean last night? I smell skank everywhere. Caitlin laughs, and I tense. Can you believe that bitch didn't even bother to show up to practice again this morning? Caitlin tells her, loud enough for me to hear. Doesn't matter, I guess. Her fat ass was getting too heavy to catch. Liquid heat races through my veins, and I hear my pulse in my ears. I turn to them as they get dressed. You want to say something? Say it to my face. But they both ignore me as if I haven't said anything. So did JD book a limo? Caitlin asks Lila. Oh yeah, one big enough for all of us, she replies, and they both slam their locker doors, walking past me and down the aisle. This night is going to be epic, especially without Ryan there to stink up the car. Their delighted laughter grates on my ears, and tears spring to my eyes, but I slam my locker closed, refusing to give in. All through PE, I stay away from them, slowly feeling their bubble getting bigger and pressing me further away. They're them, and I'm me. Over here, separated, alone, and excluded. I'm outside the bubble. Again. How did I get here? What do I do? After class, I shower and dress quickly, heading to my locker before lunch when I really just want to leave. It's easier, isn't it? Rather than facing people I don't like and being where I no longer feel I belong. I've been here before. The uncertainty, the self-hate, the powerlessness, it's all so familiar. But the last time, I took those feelings and turned them outward, making others feel what I felt. What I didn't see is that those feelings came from people doing the same thing to me. I feel and fear exactly what they want me to feel and fear. I won't respond the same this time. I'm better than this. I'm going to be better. Moving down the lunch line, I take an orange juice out of the cooler and walk for the cashier. But arms suddenly lock me in on both sides, keeping me from moving. My heart jumps, thinking it's Misha. But then I turn around, seeing Trey behind me. You know, if you wanted dirty, I could have done dirty. He taunts, staring down at me. Maybe it was good Laurent broke you in, though. Doesn't take long for you little bitches to turn slut once you get a taste for it. I breathe hard. What the hell did he just say? He laughs. You should have seen the train we pulled on this girl last week. She had guys lined up. It was so fucking good. I push through his arm and pay for my juice, carrying my drink and books to an empty table as far away from him as I can find. I feel eyes on me everywhere, like people are laughing. I haven't sat at a table alone in a long time. Opening my juice carton and notebook, I dive into the math homework due tomorrow, using it as a shield to not look so pathetic. No one wants you here, a female voice says, and I look up to see Lila. I can't even eat looking at you. And she picks up my carton of juice and pours it into my lap. I gasp, the ice-cold drink making me shoot out of my chair as it cascades down my bare legs. I glare at her and dart out with both hands, shoving her away. She stumbles back, dropping the carton, but comes back in, pushing me back. Oh, someone shouts, fight! The cafeteria erupts in noise, chairs scraping against the linoleum and people shifting around for a better view. Lila reaches for my hair, but I rear back and slap her arms away. My shirt and shorts stick to my skin, and anger rages in every muscle. She comes back for me, and I get ready to lunge, to push her back again. But then, all of a sudden, there's a wall standing in front of me. A wall in a white t-shirt with tattoos. Misha. Trey comes around Lila and inches into my and Misha's space, a challenge in his eyes. Move out of the way, he demands. Make me. Trey scoffs, knowing Misha's not kidding, but clearly not ready to take him on here in front of everyone, especially when he got his ass kicked last time. If you want her, you're going to have to go through me, Misha states, and I step around to his side, refusing to hide. The OJ sticks to my legs and seeps into my shoes, and I struggle to ignore the murmurs around me. Misha's standing up for me in front of everyone, and against my will, my heart warms. After school, Trey says, the drive-in. Nah, I'll be busy tonight, Misha replies. Trey laughs, looking around to his friends, all of them probably assuming Misha's too scared to show up. So how about we just do it now? Misha tosses out calmly, and then throws a punch across Trey's face, surprising us all. Exclamations sound off around the crowd, and Trey stumbles back, cursing. Fuck! Misha dives in, but then JD grabs him from behind, holding him back as Principal Burroughs steps between the boys. Stop it! She shouts to both of them. Stop it right now! Misha fights against JD's restraint, JD turning red just from the struggle to keep him back. Okay, calm down, man, calm down. Get this asshole away from me! Trey gestures to Misha, screaming around his stepmom. You fuck with her again, Misha growls, and I'll make what just happened seem like a dream. He pauses and then speaks to Lila. And you, don't talk to her again. You just want her to feel as ugly as you are. She arches an eyebrow, folding her arms over her chest. She knows it's true, just like it was true for me, but she won't credit it with a response.
I won't fuck with her, Trey taunts. Looks like you already been there and done that.
A few giggles go off around me, and Misha breaks away from JD, glaring at Trey and looking like he's dying to make sure he never talks shit again. But instead, he twists around and takes my hand, leading us out of the cafeteria.
Mr. Laurent,
the principal calls. But Misha ignores her and pulls me into the men's bathroom, wetting some paper towels and wringing them out. He pushes me back against the sink and kneels down, lifting my foot and setting it on his thigh, slowly wiping the drying orange juice off my leg. Pain springs to the back of my eyes, and I watch him, carefully and quietly taking care of me. Wetting more paper towels, he moves to the other leg and then starts untying my socked shoes. Are we still friends? I ask, my voice cracking. Because I need Misha, not Mason. I was wrong last night. Everything is Misha. They're not separate. And I need my friend. Holding my soiled chucks, he stands up and takes my hand, still silent as he leads me out of the bathroom. Where are we going? Away from here. We don't bother to look back, and I'll probably be in trouble tomorrow, but no one and nothing could drag me away from him right now. I tighten my hold on his hand, ready to follow him anywhere, at least for today. We drive for a long time, and we don't speak. The music plays, the afternoon is overcast, and my eyelids are heavy, probably because Thursday night was the last time I slept well. I don't know if I'm ready to forgive him, but I want him. The smell of him, the sight of him, the feel of him. He doesn't even have to touch me. Just being near him is soothing at the moment. Maybe I'm just vulnerable, but right now I don't want to be anywhere else. A sprinkle of rain starts as we pull into a driveway leading up to a house that's shielded behind a wall of trees. A flutter courses through my belly. Your house? We're in Thunder Bay? I didn't think I was dazed out that long. He pulls into the garage and turns off the engine. Have you ever been here? I nod. A couple weeks ago, you hadn't written in so long, I needed to make sure you're okay. You don't have to explain. He cuts me off. I should have written. You had every right to be worried. Why did you stop? He smiles gently, opening his door and taking my shoes. A story for a different day, but it didn't have anything to do with you. He assures. Your dad said you were fine. I climb out of the truck and walk around, following him into the house. My dad doesn't air dirty laundry. Did you tell him who you were? Would he know me? Of course, he replies, entering what looks like a laundry room and tossing my shoes into the washer. He's seen your letters coming in for years. Yes, of course. If I told him, maybe I would have been invited into the house and seen a picture of Misha. And then I would have found out even sooner who he really was. Misha comes over to me and pulls up the hem of my shirt, but I lock my arms down, looking at him. No one's home, he reassures me. Let's get your clothes in the wash. You can take a shower and I'll find you something to wear. It only takes me a moment to consider. I don't feel like I need to leave anytime soon, and the stickiness is still all over me, despite Misha's efforts to clean me up. I nod and pull off clothes, handing him everything, one by one. He puts my shorts, shirt, and underthings in the washer, adding soap and starting it, and then hands me a t-shirt from the dryer. Pulling it on, I let him take my hand and lead me into the rest of the house. We walk through a large living room, and I look around, gaping. Oh, jeez, I mumble. What? I shake my head. Nothing. It's hilarious, really. He hangs out with the worst of the worst at school, looks like a delinquent, and everyone, including Lila, Trey, and even me once, assumed he was a poor foster kid or nothing but a thug. If Lila discovers he lives in a house bigger than hers and mine put together, and has a Gauguin hanging on the wall, she'll be the first one kissing his ass. The house is dark, but even still I can tell it's stunning. There's wood shining everywhere, fancy art and knickknacks decorating the place, and I smell the rich scent of polish. What did Misha say his dad did in his letters? He's an antique dealer? And if he's the child of a senator, then he has to be well set. Do you like peanut butter and jelly? He asks, taking me up the stairs. It's the only thing I make that I don't burn. It's fine. He leads me into a spacious bathroom, very dark and very male, and opens the glass door, turning on the shower for me. Take your time. He plants a kiss on my forehead and takes a towel off the shelf, setting it on the counter for me. I'll go make us some sandwiches. I stare at him as he leaves, and despite the height and muscle of a man, I'm finally seeing him as the kid I envisioned so many years ago, who I became so attached to and loved. The one I pictured as kind and gentle and caring. After my shower, I dry off and pull the t-shirt back on, finding a brush on the counter and tugging it through my ratty hair. Thankfully, Lila's assault missed my head, so I didn't have to wash my hair. Walking into the hallway, I hear the soft hum of music coming from down the hall, and I step quietly, following it, but carefully, in case it's his dad. I find Misha in his room. He's walking around, picking up a few clothes, and on the bed sits plates with PB&J sandwiches and sprigs of grapes, with juice boxes sitting next to them. I hold in my laugh. I don't think I've had that lunch since fifth grade. Pink plays at low volume, and I feel my chest warm at the gesture. He knows I like her, too. But then I gaze around his room and see four office boxes, complete with lids, stacked on top of each other up against the wall. I walk over. What's this? I ask, lifting the lid. But I widen my eyes, taken aback, and drop the lid on the floor. The box is filled with black envelopes, with silver writing. Oh my God. I reach in and fan the envelopes, seeing my writing on every single one. He kept them. He kept them? I don't know why, but I guess I never thought he actually saved them. Why would he? Thinking back, I can't even remember what they said. Couldn't have been too interesting if I can't recall. The other three boxes are probably filled with letters, too. I can't believe I wrote you this much, I say, a little horrified. You must have been so bored with me. I adored you. I look up, seeing him stare at the floor. An ache weaves its way through my chest. I adore you, he corrects himself. I've read them all at least twice. My favorites, a lot more than that. His favorites. And then I recall the letters I'd found at the cove. When he stayed there, away from home, he took those with him. The rest stayed here. I feel guilty now. They're in my desk, I confess. I lied. I didn't burn them. He gives me a little nod. Yeah, I hope so. I have mine too, that you threw all over the place at the cove, in case you want them back. I give him a small smile, grateful. Yes, I do want them back. I replace the lid, kind of curious to open a few letters and relive all the embarrassing things I shared with him over the years. Kissing with tongue the first time, the music I suggested that I thought was so epic, but realize now it was kind of lame, and all the arguments we got into. Remembering back, I was pretty hard on him. I mean, using an Android phone doesn't make him an introverted burner who probably won't ever have a job or a valid driver's license at the same time. I didn't mean that. And I'm sure he didn't mean what he said when he called me a Steve Jobs cultist who worships inferior technology because I'm too much of a bubblehead high on apps to know the difference. On second thought, no. I like the truce we have going on today. The letters can wait. I walk over and sit down on his bed, bringing up my legs to sit cross-legged. He kicks off his shoes and lies down sideways on the bed, supporting his head on his hand. I take the sandwich and peel off the top crust while he pops a grape in his mouth. I stare down at the food. I'm hungry, but I'm also tired and suddenly feel like I don't give a shit. One of us has to start talking. He wants something true, something he doesn't know. I didn't have many friends in grade school, I tell him, still keeping my eyes down. I had one, Delilah. He's quiet, and I know he's staring at me. She had this shaggy, blonde hair that kind of looked like a mullet, and she wore these frumpy corduroy skirts, I went on. They looked 30 years old. She wasn't cool, and she didn't dress right. She was alone a lot, like me, so we played together at recess, but I narrow my eyes, trying to harden them as the image of her comes to the forefront in my mind. But I got tired of not hanging out with the popular kids, I admit. I'd see them hanging on each other, laughing and surrounded by everyone, and I felt envious, left out of something better. I felt like I was being laughed at. I lick my dry lips, still avoiding his eyes. like I could feel their eyes crawling over my skin. Were they disgusted by me? Why didn't they like me? I shouldn't have cared. I shouldn't have thought the kids who shunned me would be worth it. But I did. I finally raise my eyes and find his green ones watching me, unblinking. And in my head, I continue, Delilah was holding me back. I needed better friends. So one day, I ran off. When recess time came, I hid around a corner so she wouldn't find me, and I watched her, waiting for her to go off and play with someone else so I could do the same and she wouldn't look for me. I swallow, my throat stretching painfully. But she didn't, I whisper, tears welling in my eyes. She just stood against a wall, alone and looking awkward and uncomfortable, waiting for me. My body shakes and I start to cry. That was the day I became this, when I started to believe that 100 people's fickle adoration was worth more than one person's love. And for a while, it felt kind of good. Tears streamed down my face. I was lost in the novelty of it. Being mean, slipping in a quick insult, making a joke of others and of my teachers, I felt respected, adored. My new skin suited me. And then more images creep in, still so vivid after all this time. But months later, when I'd see Delilah playing alone, being laughed at, not having anywhere to belong, I started to hate that skin I was so comfortable in, the skin of a fake and shallow coward. I wipe the tears, trying to take in a deep breath. He's looking at me, but the heat of shame covers my face, and I'm worried. What does he think of me? And when I started writing you a year later, I go on, I needed you so much by that point. I needed someone I could be the person I wanted to be with. I could go back. I could be the girl who was Delilah's friend again. The girl who stood up to the mean kids and didn't need a spirit animal, because she was her own. I close my eyes, just wanting to hide. I feel the bed shift under me and then his hands cupping my face. I shake my head, inching away. Don't, I'm awful. You were in fourth grade, he says, trying to soothe me. Kids are mean, and at that age, everyone wants to belong. You think you're the only one who feels like shit? Who's made mistakes? He nudges my face, making me open my eyes and look into his. We're all ugly, Ryan. The only difference is, some hide it and some wear it. I slide the food out of the way and crawl into his lap, wrapping my arms around him and burying my face in his neck, hugging him close. He gently falls back onto the bed, lying down and taking me with him. Why didn't we do this ages ago? Why was I so scared to meet him and change things? We've been there for each other during his grandmother's funeral, lengthy summer camps with hardly any communication to each other, and even a couple of girlfriends of his who I never told him I was really jealous of. Why did I think that all the words and letters and the friendship would fade so easily? His arms hold me tight as I lay my head on his chest, hearing his heartbeat and the light tapping of rain against the window. This is new for me. I've been comfortable in places, but I think this is the first time I've been anywhere I never want to leave. My eyelids fall closed, sleep pulling at me. I have a question. He speaks up, causing me to stir. Hmm? When you write on the walls at school, you sign the messages as punk. Why? I keep my eyes closed, but I breathe out a weak little laugh. Do you remember the letter you wrote about your first tattoo and your dad saying you looked like a punk? Yeah. So it was a tribute to you, I tell him. A shout out to the ruffians and rule breakers. But why not use your own name? I pinch my eyebrows together. Because I don't want to get caught? Duh. Okay, he says. So what you do is hide in the dark to share words anonymously because you want to be heard but not mocked. Is that it? I open my eyes thinking, is that what I do? You want to be loved without risking consequence, so you reach out to get the attention you need while enjoying the luxury of taking no responsibility for those words. I start to shrink into myself. I don't like what he's saying or the fact that he's saying it, but I can't deny that he's right. I don't want to hear feedback, because if they knew it was me, their reactions would be different. But it's not exactly fair to throw things in their faces and hide under their noses either. Alone, empty, fraud, shame, fear. He murmurs, holding me tighter. Don't you get it yet? You don't have to be afraid or embarrassed.
No one does you better than you. You can't be replaced. Not everyone will see that, but only you need to. He kisses my hair, and I wrap my arm around his torso. No one does me better than me. I close my eyes again, hearing what he's saying. I changed because I didn't think what I brought to the table was worthy enough. I let them make me believe that. But who made them authorities? I may no longer be adored, but I might not be so miserable either. And I may eat alone, but that's not such terrible company, is it? I feel him move under me, and then a blanket covers my legs and body, locking our warmth in under the covers. I slowly drift off to sleep to the sounds of the rain and his heartbeat. A velvety tickle glides across my skin, and I strain to lift my lids. The room is darker, the sun having set, but the soft glow of the lamp on the bedside table illuminates the bed, and I glance over at the window, seeing that it's now dark outside. The rain pounds hard, echoing through the roof, and thunder rolls outside. Misha is bare-chested and propped up on his side next to me, his head down by my ass. Which is bare, because he's pulled up my shirt. What are you doing? Shh, don't move, he orders, moving a pen over my skin. You're the closest thing I have to write on. I snicker, closing my eyes again. He'd better not be using a Sharpie. That'll take days to get off. The peaceful noise of the rain outside lulls me back into relaxation, and I fold my arms under my head, feeling the felt tip move quickly over my skin, stopping every so often to dot an I or poke a period. I wish we could stay here forever, I muse. Oh, you're not moving anytime soon. Your ass is too nice to look at. I cross my legs at the ankles, teasing. Is that all a Thunder Bay boy can do with a girl's ass? A light slap hits my right cheek, and I laugh. But then, after a pause, he stops writing. Have you ever... he asks, drifting off. It takes me a moment to connect the dots, but then I realize what he's asking. Anal? I clarify. Well, considering I've only had sex once before you, I'm sure you know the answer to that. I certainly wouldn't have done that the first time, no matter how naive I was. And since Misha and I haven't done that, then of course the answer is no. So we're virgins then, he says, his tone making it sound like he's kind of enjoying that idea. Yeah, virgins, I grumble. And I plan on dying one because there's no way you're sticking that in there. He snorts, breaking into a laugh. Capping the pen, he moves up and over me, lifting my shirt over my head. I arch my neck back, meeting his mouth and kissing him. His teeth nibbling my skin sends an electric shock down my belly and straight between my thighs. I guess the nap helped. He slides his hand under my chest, cupping my breast, and I'm already turned on. Is this okay? He asks. I stare at his lips, dipping in for more. Hell yes. I groan, my eyes damn near rolling into the back of my head as his mouth trails down my neck, devouring me in hot, demanding kisses. He grinds his hips into me, and I feel the hardening bulge between his legs. Talk to me, he whispers. I need your words. Talk? Now? His hand glides down my bare back, brushing my hair and making it tickle my skin. He takes my ass, kneads it, and without thinking, I bend my knee to the side, opening myself for him. Before I met you, I say against his lips, I fantasized about you. But you didn't know what I looked like. I knew you were Misha, I reply. That was enough. He groans, nibbling my ear and dipping his hand between my legs, his fingers sliding inside of me. I close my eyes, the pleasure of him filling me making me wetter. One night it was storming, like tonight, I tell him. The lights went out, and for the whole evening it was dark and quiet. His fingers come out, swirling around my clit, and I shudder. My breath is shallow, and I'm unable to stop my hips from trying to rub into the bed and his fingers. I reread all of your letters that night. I pant. I love the ones about when you got your first car and how you and your friends got arrested for the kegger out on some farm. You sounded so bad, so much fun. I lean back, longing for his mouth again. But the letter I love more than all the rest is when you told me about your ex-girlfriend after you'd broken up. I was so mad at first. You had a girlfriend and you hadn't told me, but I think that's when I first realized... What? He breathes out. That I wanted you. You were mine.
I was, he assures. It didn't take me long to realize that I couldn't talk to anyone like I talk to you. And I feel the same way. I always did. I couldn't go out with anyone without comparing them to Misha. He had every right to date, and I'm sure whoever she was, or they were, because there were probably more, they weren't bad people. But I still felt territorial. I knew him first. No one was going to know him better than me. I know I had no right to feel those things, which is why I never told him. Until now. I started fantasizing about you that rainy night. It was the first time I ever daydreamed about you. What did you do? He pushed his two fingers in deep, rubbing my spot and grinding himself on me. Did he want to be her? I shook my head. I wanted you to see me. I wanted you to see me and want me so much. Not just my letters, but my body, too. What'd you do? He whispers in my ear. I moan, feeling a wave of pleasure fill my thighs and pussy, and I back up into him, wanting to be filled. I laid in bed, I say, and I couldn't stop thinking about you. It was so dark, and the AC wasn't running. The more I thought about it, the hotter I got, until what? He pumps my pussy faster, grinding his dick harder. What'd you do? I pulled up my shirt. Yeah? And imagined you were standing in the corner of my room, hidden in the shadows, watching me finger myself. Don't stop. My skin was damp with sweat because it was so hot. I whimper, reaching over my head and holding the back of his neck. And I slid my hand down my panties. Did I like what I was seeing? Yeah. We were always just friends, so calm, relaxed, and cute, but I wanted you to want me. I wanted you to see me and need to be inside me. Did you come? He growls low in my ear as I rock into him. Did you come, thinking about me watching you? I nod, completely lost in the vision and his fingers. I knew I'd do anything you asked me to. I'd let you have anything you wanted. Is that true? Anything. He removes his fingers from inside me, and I hear him unzip his pants. And what do you want? He asks, his fingers gliding up my ass again. I know what he wants. My heart is pumping wildly, and I'm shaking with need. I lean my head back again, gasping over his mouth. I want you everywhere. I feel his smile curl over my lips right before he kisses me. He moves his fingers between my thighs again, rubbing and getting me wetter with need. Everywhere? He whispers. I nod. I'm his. All of me. I want him all over me. His breath shakes over my lips. Don't do this because you think I want it, he pleads. I only want what you want to give me. I need to know you can trust me again. His dark hair sits over his forehead, and his beautiful eyes tell me everything I need to hear without saying anything. He hurt me, and I hurt him. But shit happens, and love doesn't change. He makes me happier. He makes me stronger. And he knows everything and still wants me. If he can say the same, then this is it. The real thing. It's us together. My mom once told me, life is 50 wrong turns down a bumpy road. All you can hope is that you end up somewhere nice. I trust you, I say, sinking into his mouth. I want you. He swirls the wetness between my legs farther up, and I slide my hand between me and the bed, rubbing my clit as he positions himself. I'm throbbing everywhere, and my heart pounds in my chest as he pushes the tip in and stops. I gasp, feeling a tiny burn. I contract around him, breathing hard and rubbing myself faster. Ryan, he breathes out. Do you want me to stop? I shake my head, feeling so filled and good. I didn't expect that. No, I want more. Oh, God. He slides in slowly, all the way, and I arch my ass up, giving him a better position. Holy shit. He growls low. You feel so good. I need to... I close my eyes, every nerve alive and pulsing with need. He comes down on my back, kissing me as he thrusts out and back in deeper. Ah, I moan into his mouth. Are you okay? No, I whimper. Go faster. He smiles, holding himself up with one hand and holding my thigh where my leg and hip meet. Are you sure? I nod, intense pleasure washing over me and making me grip the pillows as I arch my neck back to meet his lips. I trust you, I tell him. And he bites my neck and starts fucking me harder, not holding back, and neither of us being quiet. For the rest of the night. Chapter 19. Ryan. My entire body feels like I was caught in a tornado. My arm muscles are sore, my neck hurts, I have bruises on my hips and my ass. It was fun while it was going on last night, but after waking up this morning in pain everywhere, I told him we can't do that again. He just retorted that my body wasn't used to it, and we should do it more. Man, our fifth grade teachers would be proud. I pull into a parking space at school and groan as I gingerly climb out of the Jeep. We were up half the night, and while I'm not at all tired, I'm kind of regretting not staying home and soaking in a bath today. I'm supposed to teach swim tonight, and I forgot the Advil at home. I reach into the back of the car and pull out my duffel with my swimsuit and change of clothes. After we woke up early this morning, Misha drove me back to school to collect my Jeep, and then he went to the cove to pack up his stuff while I went home to shower and clean up. I'm not sure if he's going to be in school today, but then I feel hands come around my waist, and I break out in a shiver as a whisper hits my ear from behind. Are you sore? He teases. I arch an eyebrow and turn around, seeing him smirk down at me. Are you kidding? It was fun, though. I can't hold back the smile as my cheeks warm. Yeah, it was. We walk into the school and head for my locker, and I notice he's sticking by my side. I'm fine, you know? I tell him. Yesterday, Trey, Lila, and the lunchroom feels like ages ago. I'm not scared. I know. Mason, someone calls. I turn around to see Ms. Till, the art teacher, carrying a pink slip. She hands it to him, speaking sweetly. The principal would like to see you in the office. She wanted me to give you this in first period, but I just spotted you. You may as well go now. He takes the slip, and she pats him on the arm, walking away. Misha doesn't read it, merely crumbles it in his fist and tosses it to the ground. What are you doing? I ask. If she can't get a hold of your parents about the fights, she could bring in the police. Do you want to be found out? I think we know how well I stay arrested, he retorts, a cocky look on his face. I roll my eyes. Yeah, okay, rich boy. Pulling out my sketchbook, I spot the cashmere scarf still hanging in the locker, and something hits me. He gave me a new scarf that first week, with perfume on it. Whose scarf did you try to give me that first week? His eyes drop, looking somber. Annie's. Annie's? His sister? And then my eyes go wide, and I turn to him, remembering what I'd said. Oh my God, I burst out. Annie, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean what I said. I cringe at myself. I called her a skank, thinking she was some random girl who left her clothes behind in his truck. Shit. It's okay. He gives me a half smile. I know you didn't know. Ugh, I feel sick. I'm the worst. Well, you couldn't give it to me anyway, I scold. She'd want it back. He grows quiet, avoiding my eyes. I'd totally forgot his sister and all the drama. She's a junior. Where was she last night? His dad must have come home during my nap, because Misha had to lock the door later on so he wouldn't walk in on us. But Annie was never mentioned. Mr. Laurent. I turn my head to see Principal Burrows coming down the hallway. Students move around her, everyone heading to their first class. In my office, she orders. Now. He turns away from her. No thanks. I stand frozen, watching. Just go, Misha. She's not going to let him off the hook, and it's only going to escalate. Now. I'd rather not leave my friend alone when that piece of shit son of yours is roaming the halls. He snarls. Aren't there laws about sexual predators not allowed to be within a certain number of feet from a school? Anger mars her face. If I have to ask again, I'm calling the police. Mason, I correct myself. Just go. Burrows puts her hand on his back and gestures for him to move. But he whips away from her touch, scowling. Fuck you. He glares at her and then turns to me. I'm leaving. I'm done here. I'll be at the cove after school. What? I exclaim. He kisses me on the forehead and shoots Burrows one last look before walking down the hall and back out the front door. I look around and see that other students are watching the exchange. Burrows meets my eyes briefly, but she doesn't go after him. Turning around, she walks back down the hallway and disappears into the throng of bodies rushing to class. Misha's gone, and I'm a little pissed he'd rather leave school and me than deal with her. If he moves back to Thunder Bay, I'll barely see him, at least until summer break. What the hell's going on with him? And now that I finally slow down enough to think about it, he still hasn't answered all of my questions. Why is he here? Why did Trey have his watch? And why is he staying at the Cove? Everyone heads to their next class or into lunch, and I stand next to the water fountain, filling up my water bottle. I don't feel like braving the cafeteria today, even though I'm a little hungry. I know I should go in. I should sit at a table without the armor of my phone, homework, or a book, and just be there. If I hear whispers, then so be it. Let them talk. But I don't have it in me today for some reason. Maybe I just don't want to see them. Maybe I don't feel like getting covered in juice when I have to be here half the evening. Maybe I'm allowing myself to just wimp out today. The hallway slowly empties, shoes squeak across the floor, and locker slam shut. The clatter of trays and the chatter of conversations filter out into the hall, and I hear a door open to my left. Looking up, I see Trey coming out of the bathroom. He holds a black cord with a pennant attached to it, and he walks over to the garbage can, pulling it apart and breaking it, and then dumping it in the can. That's Manny's, I think. It's one of the gothy necklaces he wears with some band name on it or something. Trey raises his eyes and sees me, and I twist the cap back on my water bottle and walk his way, staying far to the right to go upstairs to the library. But he rushes over and stops me, caging me in against the wall. I exhale a hard sigh, turning angry. "Where's your bodyguard?" he asks, leaning his hands on the wall at my sides and blocking my escape. "Oh, that's right. I heard he bailed school. Is he coming back?" I push at his arm, trying to slip away, but he pushes me back, and I drop my bottle. "Get the hell away from me," I growl. "It's your own fault," he replies. "You shouldn't be caught alone with me. You've been asking for this." I dart my eyes to the sides, looking for an adult, but the hallway is nearly empty. "You know what I think I'll do?" He gives me a sick smile. "One of these nights, I'll get you in the parking lot after you teach swim lessons, and I'll spread those pretty legs and fuck you right there on the ground. Would you like that, baby? I'm not scared of you. But can you outrun me?" An amused look crosses his eyes. "Your boyfriend's gone now. Every corner you turn, every night when you go to sleep, I'll be there. And I'm going to find out exactly what I've been missing." He pushes off the wall, and I fist my fingers, realizing they're chilled to the bone. "You're just like every other bitch in this school. They all wanted it." I take in deep breaths as I watch him walk down the hall to the lunchroom, trying to slow down my pulse. I don't care what he thinks he can get away with. I'll talk to my mom tonight and take this to the principal. If she doesn't handle him, then we'll go over her head. He's not threatening me again. I move to make my way up the steps, but I see the men's room door Trey came out of and remember the black necklace. He must have taken it from Manny. If Manny's in there, why hasn't he come out yet? I look around, not seeing anyone in the hall, and hurry to the bathroom door, slowly pushing it open. "Manny?" I call out. "Why the hell am I doing this? He won't want to see me. I'm sure he's fine." "Manny, it's Ryan," I say. I don't hear anything, and for a moment I think the bathroom is empty, but then I hear a shuffle and step inside. Inching past the empty stalls, I walk along the sinks to the hidden space where the hand dryers sit. Manny is standing with his back to me, his backpack dangling from his right hand, and his head bowed. He's shaking. "Manny?" He raises his head but doesn't turn around. "Get out," he demands. "Get the fuck away from me." "Manny, what happened?" I step to the side, trying to see his face, but then I see something, and I stop. Blood trails off his ear and down his neck. The hole on his lobe where a black gauge used to fit is now empty, and he's bleeding, although it looks like it stopped. Trey. Oh my God, did he rip it out? I take a step toward Manny, but he flinches, moving away. Of course. Why would she help? He sees me just as dangerous as he sees Trey. He thinks I'll victimize him. And why not? I've done it in the past. Grief fills my heart. How many times have I made him feel alone? I stay rooted, not wanting to make him scared, but I want to help. It won't always be like this. It's always been like this, he retorts. I stand there, thinking back to grade school. Manny and I got along okay until fourth grade when I changed. But even before that, he was on the periphery of whatever was happening. He was small and lanky, never picked for sports, and often got in trouble for not turning in assignments. I knew then that he had it a little stressful at home, but other kids don't understand things like that. They just judge. When I was little, he goes on, I used to be able to go home and get away from it, but now we're older. We have Facebook, and everything they say about me during the day, I get to see online every night. I can hear the tears in his voice, and I want to get him some napkins to clean up the blood, but I don't want him to stop talking either. One of you assholes pushes my tray into my clothes and dumps food all over me, and the first thing everyone does is take out their phones. And then I have to relive it through pictures on my newsfeed every hour, even days and weeks later, over and over again. I can't get away from it anymore, not even when I leave school. I never thought about it like that. When we were younger, the dynamics of friendships and fitting in were only difficult at school. When we got home, we were free, and most of us, hopefully, felt safe there. Now the only thing we leave at school is school. The pressure, the gossiping, the bad feelings, it follows us home online. There's no break from it. It's constant, the humiliation. It won't always be like this, I say again, moving closer. My family sees it, my sisters and their friends. I embarrass them. He shakes, sobbing again. That's why I get high. He pulls a rag and spray can out of his backpack, and I move forward, a lump stretching my throat. As high as I can get, as often as I can get, he says, so I can bear the fucking pain of breathing and eating and looking at people like you. Manny, when everything is painful, he drops the backpack and sprays the inhalant on the rag. You start to ask yourself, what's the point? No one cares, and you start to care even less. You just want the pain to stop. He brings it to his nose, and I lunge out, knocking the cloth out of his hand and grabbing the can. I wrap my arm around him and pull him into me, both of us starting to cry. It's okay, I whisper. I drop the stuff on the floor and hold his frail, shaking body as tears stream down my face. What the fuck? How did we get here? He wasn't like this as a kid. Neither of us were like this. He breathes hard, and I think about all the times I didn't think of him, and all the things I wasn't seeing. All the times I ignored what was happening because of the fear of being alone, empty, and ashamed of who I was. We were kids once, and we liked ourselves. We were happy. How did that change? I pull away and toss the stuff into the garbage, wetting some paper towels for him to clean off his neck. Handing them to him, I lean down on the counter and try to calm the sobs in my chest. This is crazy. How can he hurt himself like that? He has to know it gets better. The world will open up, and we won't feel so trapped. You just need to hang on. But I look over at him, seeing tears coat his face, bags under his eyes, and him staring off. He absently wipes the blood off his neck, looking completely fucking empty, and like he's done hanging on. I wipe my tears away and try to steel my tone. It won't always be like this. I want him to know that. But he just looks over at me, looking like he's hanging on by a thread. When does it get better? My heart aches. Yeah, when? How long does he have to wait? There should always be hope. We change, our environment changes, and our communities change. It will get better. But that doesn't mean we're powerless in the meantime either. I can't change his life, but I can do this. I pick up his backpack and stand up, handing it to him. Taking his hand, I lead him out into the hallway, seeing him toss his wet cloth in the trash on the way out. We walk across the hall to the lunchroom, and I relax my grip on his hand just in case he wants to let go of me. But he doesn't. We walk hand in hand to the lunch line, already hearing the deafening noise fade a little and murmurs drift around the room. I give him a tray and take one myself. Why are you doing this? He asks in a low voice. You don't like me. I've always liked you. I turn my eyes on him. And I need a friend. My being an asshole was personal to him, but it wasn't personal to me. I never stopped liking Manny. We move down the line, and my back is hot. Hopefully it's my paranoia, feeling all those stares. If not, I guess I've laid down the gauntlet. And without Misha here this time to protect me. Here we go. I always eat in the library. He looks around nervously. I take a Jell-O cup. The lunchroom is where we eat. Everyone's looking at us. It's because you have a better ass than me, that's why. A laugh escapes him, but he quickly diffuses it, probably because he's not sure if he can trust me. I don't blame him. We load up our trays with chips, mac and cheese, and brownies. I also get a soda because, fuck it, I'm hungry, and I want to drink some calories today. After we pay, I walk over to a round table and glance back, making sure he's following me. His eyes dart left and right, carrying his tray and backpack, and he's probably nervous as hell. After all, I can't remember the last time I spotted him in here, and everyone is looking at us. I keep my eyes forward and set my tray down, having a seat. He quickly slides into a chair on the other side of the table, and even though the hairs on my skin are standing on end and I'm aware of every damn person in here, I inhale a deep breath and give him a reassuring smile. See? I brag, opening my Coke. It's getting better already. But then, something smashes down in front of me. My food splatters, and I gasp, instantly stilling as mac and cheese hits my arm and hair. What the? Whoa! Howls sound off across the room, followed by laughter, and I know it's coming from my old table. People around us take notice and start laughing, a few taking out their phones to take a pic. I sit there, frozen. I look up, seeing a fat, cheesy noodle dangling from my hair over my forehead, and I lock eyes with Manny as he reaches over and picks up the red apple that had come crashing into my tray. He stares at me, looking surprised, but then his eyes shoot up to the noodle, and he snorts. Hey, I snap. This isn't funny. But he's smiling anyway, shaking with laughter. I roll my eyes, feeling my stomach tighten into a knot, but I set my drink down and pluck the noodle out of my hair. Grabbing a napkin, I start to clean off my arm where thick cheese is sticking to my skin. Hey, a male voice says. I look up, seeing JD pull out a seat. He grabs the apple away from Manny and flings it across the cafeteria, back to where it came from. I don't look, but I hear a crash and squeals. What are you doing? I ask, watching him lean back in the seat, relaxing. He shrugs, taking my Coke and unscrewing the cap. Well, when your girl screws your best friend, it's time for a new girl and a new best friend, I guess. We like you more anyway, someone else says. I turn my head to see Ten taking a seat next to Manny. He looks over at the kid. Hi. Manny sits slumped, suddenly appearing frightened to even look at anyone. Hi, he mumbles. JD takes a sip of my soda. When did you know? I ask him. I'm sure.